I don't want to share someone else's thoughts. I want to create my own original thoughts. I want to create my own original solutions. I want to look at situations and come up with my own phrasing, my own words, and do it my way.
This is the John Taffer Podcast.
Shut it down!
Well, hello, everybody. I'm John Taffer. This is the John Taffer Podcast. How is everybody doing? So I got a story for you, Corey.
Okay.
I got a phone call this morning that they're taking vaccinations, John, from my doctor. Go to this website, which is a university medical center. I won't say what and when. A university medical center. Go to the site, register, you can get a vaccine. Say, holy hell. And hurry up, because it's filling up.
Yeah.
Sweet. I open up the computer. There's a little application. I fill out the application. I put in my age. I give all the information. They ask for my medical insurance information, all that. I hit submit. Son of a gun. 10 minutes later, I get a confirmation email. I have an appointment at 9:15 the morning of the 28th for my vaccine. Wow, it's over for me. Wow, I can see light at the end of the tunnel. This is unbelievable. Then I get a phone call from our chief of staff, Corey, that says, no, John, you have to be over 70. So it doesn't say that anywhere on a website. It just says fill it out. And it doesn't say that in the confirmation. I have a written confirmation for a vaccine. No, you got to be 70. So we call the hospital. And we say, what is the deal with this? We have a confirmation. Well, if he's under 70, he's going to have to wait. Well, what does that mean, wait? Does that mean you're going to have to sit there all day and wait till an opening? Which I'm fine. If I got to sit there all day, I'll sit there all day, right? For an opening appointment or something. And then you go, fine. Or does it mean I got to wait 2 months to the tier changes to my age group?
Oh.
Right? So it's 70 and then it notches its way down. Mm-hmm. So this morning I'm totally jubilant. I'm getting a vaccine. I can't wait, man. We're out of here. I'm gonna go to the... And then I get a phone call from production. By the way, John, you know, with the viral standards that we have, and I've been working with my team on this for weeks, and Viacom, who's an amazing company, who owns my network, has a Viacom, a COVID policy for productions, and is a COVID officer who's on set, who has complete authority to keep everybody safe, including myself and the 60 crew members and everybody. So how are we doing this in a bubble? They're putting us all in a hotel. So I'm now thinking, I'm going to get the vaccine on the 28th, but February 2nd, I start production. I'm back in a bubble again. It doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. I still can't go to a freaking restaurant.
Yeah,
I still can't go out. So then I find out the appointment isn't real. They're going to turn me away. So, you know, this morning for about 2 hours there, man, I thought I was coming out of this. And I'm guessing this is the same kind of chaos that's going on all over the country. But I must tell you, I wrote a note to the governor. And you know, I ask all of you, how many of you know how, when, and where to get the vaccine? Do you, Corey?
I have no idea.
Yeah. I don't know anybody who does anywhere across the country. And I find it remarkable that all of these governors were told, you're going to get the vaccine in December, you're going to get blah, blah. Then they were told, you know, in this state, you're going to get 300 and something thousand. Governor Cuomo got 2 million. As of yesterday, he administered 180,000 of them. And he's writing a book on leadership.
What?
So my point is this, and I'm not being Democrat or Republican. I don't know of a state that is organized. They knew this was coming. Right? The biggest problem is they got the vaccine. They can't get it into people's arms. I don't understand how this can happen, candidly. And it makes me want to run for freaking office, to tell you the truth, because if I was governor, this would be organized and it would be happening. And if it wasn't happening, it would change very quickly.
I believe it.
But I wouldn't be making notes and addressing it next week. That's for damn sure. So, you know, I reach out to all the governors that are listening and all of us. They have a responsibility to tell us what's going to happen, maybe approximately when we would expect it to happen, what process, who do we call, where do we go, is there a list we put ourselves on, is there, what do we do? And everybody is sitting and waiting for them to do something. And you know, Corey, in my life, anytime I've sat and I've waited for the government to do something for me, man, I've regretted that. And unfortunately, right now, we don't have the power to do anything ourselves. So we're at the mercy of our governors, And these government individuals who have probably never managed anything like this before. Some of them have never had businesses before. They're political animals. So I challenge Governor Sisolak from the state of Nevada, and I challenge others to get control of this freaking thing. And these vaccines should not be sitting in storage facilities for a week or two. That's ridiculous. Let's move these forward and let's get this going. And the chaos that I went through this morning is a great testimonial to what this should not be. I'm fine waiting, Corey. I'm fine waiting till my tier comes. I don't want to jump in line. I don't want to do anything unethical. But I have a right to know that my tier exists. I have a right to know that at some point they're going to get to that tier. I have a right to know about when that would be, even if it's going to change. And I have a right to know that I'm in some line, some list, somewhere.
Right. There's light at the end of the tunnel, like you always say.
Yes. And the fact that that isn't happening in our states is outrageous to me. And I think we should all start demanding it. Anyway, so the good news is there are vaccines.
Yeah.
I guess the bad news is they're not distributing it well at all. Every governor is blowing it, every single one. Nevada, I know, is the seventh worst state in the country as far as distribution. I don't know what other states are. I haven't looked at all the numbers. But the fact of the matter is local government, if there's anything I've learned in the past year, it's how important local government is.
Yeah.
You know, Joe Biden can say wear a mask, but he can't make you do it. Joe Biden should say, you know what, get rid of the tiers, give the vaccine to everybody. But the governors make that call, not the federal government. So at the end of the day, the government, other than a warp speed and a production of the vaccine itself, the federal government has not impacted us during this process. Only the local governments have. And the next time we vote in local elections, remember this stuff. Remember, local government is about managing. Policies are created at much higher levels. Local government is about managing logistics, process, and money. And if they can't manage this, they should not be in freaking office. Remember this. Next time you have a local election, I don't care what party affiliation you have. If your state is in chaos right now over distributing this vaccine, when they knew back in August that they were going to have it in December, I would call that malpractice. If an attorney did that, he'd be sued for malpractice. If a doctor did that, he'd be sued for malpractice. Our politicians are conducting malpractice right now. And I find it completely outrageous. And you know what's interesting, Corey, about all of this?
What's that?
I'm scared to make a stink.
Right.
Because then they won't put me on a freaking list.
That's true.
And you know, if I supported President Trump, and by the way, I don't. I think that the man has turned himself into a total ass in every conceivable way.
Right.
And has disappointed those who supported him as much as he's disappointed those who doesn't. So, but if I did support him, people would hate me for it. If I support President Biden, other people hate me for it. So today is this world of fear, Corey. If I say something you don't like, you post a bad picture of me online. Right? If I go someplace that people don't think I should go to, they take a picture of me there. If I pick my nose, they post a picture of that online. So everybody is just looking to catch everybody today. And there's this certain divisiveness. And it's like, Corey, you better live up to my standards or I'm going to take a picture of you and embarrass you.
Cancel culture.
Cancel culture. And this cancel culture comes from this fear. And fear seems to drive it all, Corey. You see, when they tore statues down, whether you're in favor of the statue or not, I'm not going into the politics of it or not. But if some people want the statue taken down, they should have the balls to go out and say it. If some people don't want the statue down, they too should have the balls to go out and say it. So when the people who want the statue to stay don't say anything, then the people who want it to go could only be 1% of the population, but they own the voice.
Yeah.
So fear makes us quiet today, Corey. I'm scared to talk about political things that somebody might disagree with today. I'm not scared. I'm reluctant to do that. I don't want to get in arguments with people. I don't want to fight all day about this stuff, so I don't. And I'm sure you don't.
No.
And we all avoid this stuff today because of fear. So I'm fearful that you'll hate me because of my views, or I'm fearful that you'll expose me because of my views, whatever the hell that means. And I'm fearful of this, and I'm fearful that you're going to affect my income, and I'm fearful that you're going to raise my taxes, and I'm fearful that I'm going to get an IRS audit, and I'm fearful it's going to rain tomorrow. But every freaking thing, I'm scared. So now we don't stick up for ourselves. We don't engage. We step back. And things that are important to you, Corey, maybe you're hesitant to talk about now. And maybe now is the time you should be talking about those things. I don't know. I'm not suggesting one or the other. I'm just using it as a simple example. And why don't we speak up? Because of fear. And those that do speak up know that they can intimidate those who don't. And the weakness in our political system and the weakness right now is this fear of reasonable discussion. Not cursing at each other, not screaming and insulting each other, but this fear of addressing reasonable discussion. And you look at an issue like abortion, pro-choice, pro-life. I mean, neither is a jerk. You know, we all struggle with things like that in life, choices like that in life. So it's not a reason for disrespect, but we're fearful to address it. So fear is impeding our ability to talk to each other, to communicate with each other. Fear is impeding our ability to pursue new opportunities and advance ourselves. This fear paralyzes us. You know, in my book, Don't Bullshit Yourself, I categorize excuses into six buckets. Fear, great excuse, I'm scared to do it. Knowledge, oh, I don't have the knowledge, or I have too much knowledge, that's beneath me. Time, I don't have the time, well, we talked about that. Circumstances, ego, and scarcity. Those are the six buckets that I found are the biggest excuses that people use not to get ahead. And Corey, I suggest that almost every one of them is complete BS. Look at scarcity. Steve Jobs created Apple in his garage. He didn't have any freaking money. Right? Look at knowledge. He didn't have knowledge either.
Right.
How many people go into businesses that they've never been in before? It happens all the time. And if you want knowledge, Corey, if you've never produced a podcast before, ever, could you go on YouTube and learn how to do it?
Oh, in 20 minutes.
Bingo. Yeah. So the knowledge is out there. So that's just a bullshit excuse. Oh, I don't have the knowledge. That's especially today. Mm-hmm. That's just insane. Then the time excuse, of course, I've talked about a lot of times. Circumstances, ego, and scarcity. You know, it's interesting, circumstances. How many people went into the mask business the past year?
Oh, man.
They dealt with the circumstance.
Yeah.
They said, okay, I got to make money. This is the way the market is. I'm going to sell to the market.
Mm-hmm. I even thought about it.
I'm sure you did. A lot of us did. I had a friend who created one that a straw still slips into.
Oh, yeah.
So you could drink your cocktail while you still wore your mask. But my point is this. Circumstance could be defined as an opportunity, not an excuse. Depends on how you look at it.
Right.
So I asked a bunch of my listeners online to send me comments and the fears that they have. And my purpose during this podcast and the next three is to focus on all of these specific excuses. And this week I want to talk about fear. So I asked you guys all to send me a bunch of emails about what in your life are you scared of right now? What fears are holding you back? And Corey, wow, screens lit up.
Oh yeah.
We've done a lot of online programs and we've asked questions before, but never have we gotten the thousands of comments that we got from this simple question of what fear. It speaks loudly as to the power of fear in all of our lives right now. The fear of change, the fear of unknown, the fear of COVID, the fear of this, the fear of that, fear of losing your job, fear of getting a job, of not being able to get a job. So when I come back, I'm going to read a bunch of the more serious and profound questions that we got relating to fear.
Don't shut down this podcast. John Taffer will be right back.
You know, last week, Corey, we taped our podcast before all the riots and such at the Capitol. So yep. We never made any statement about that. And during this podcast, yeah, I interviewed President Trump, but we also sent out invitations to Joe Biden. In this podcast, we've tried to be a little non-political. And I've really tried to do that. But this is outrageous. And we all know it is. And I'm not going to voice any opinion on what outcome should be, other than if we as a society don't understand how to deal with conflict and discussions with each other, we're done. And I put forth a quick little proposition. If 75 million people go to one side of the building and 80 million people go to the other side of the building, Corey, and they refuse to talk, they refuse to have any kind of conflicting discussions.
Right, right.
One of three things is going to happen. Either there's going to be a civil war, one of the two groups is going to beat up the other and eliminate them, or we learn how to discuss and have some people walk to the middle of that room. And I think right now, as a country, we are really at a defining moment. Not from an election standpoint, but it's up to us. Either we dig in on our side and refuse to talk to the other side, or we don't. You know, Corey, I was watching a great film, Social Dilemma. Social Dilemma, yep. Thank you, on Netflix, which if nobody's watched, they should really watch it. It's great.
Actually, yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, pretty thought-provoking, huh?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So when you think about social media, if Corey is into the widget political party, which doesn't exist, of course.
Right.
And everything that he reads and types and responds to on his social media accounts is all about the widget party. The only thing Corey is going to see on his feed is the widget party stuff. So Corey's not going to learn what Republicans think. He's not going to learn what Democrats think. He's only going to see information from the widget group.
Yeah.
So Corey is not going to get new thoughts put into his mind, are you, Corey? You're only going to see widget shit.
Yeah, that's true.
So what happens in social media is they segregate, if you will, content based upon what you've reacted to in the past. So if you like liberal things, you're going to get liberal information. If you like conservative things, you're going to get conservative information. So if you only get the information that you're reacting to positively, you never hear from the opposing side. So now Corey's Mr. Widget, right, buddy? You're all about the widget party.
Yeah.
You vote straight widget. You deal with nothing that's non-widget. And to you, anybody who's a Democrat or Republican must be an idiot because you don't understand their policies. You've never read anything. You've never seen anything. So anybody who takes that position against the widgets must be a complete moron. That's what's happening.
It's scary.
So we watch one newscast or the other. You know, I every day go to the Fox app and the CNN app and the MSNBC app. I do it every day. And it's fascinating the differences between the three of them. But you know what I think, Corey? I think that if I don't fill my mind with the views from the other side, then any decision that I make is BS.
Yeah, because you have no facts.
I have no facts. Yeah. So I'm an ignorant decision maker. And then social media, where I hope to learn, is segregating, if you will, the information that I'm receiving that isn't giving me the new ideas or the opposing ideas that I need to change and grow my views. Mm-hmm. So it's a self-fulfilling situation where we keep digging in and you keep hearing and reading the stuff that enforces your views. I keep reading and hearing the stuff that enforces my views. You don't hear any of my views that could maybe open up your mind. I don't hear any of your views that can maybe open up my mind. And together we are freaking screwed. And that's what's happening. And if you haven't seen the movie Social Dilemma, please see it. It really exposes what social media is doing and how unintentional it actually was in the beginning, Corey. But think about this. If social media can herd all of us to go in the same direction at the same time, they make billions and billions of dollars. They sell everything they try to. Yeah. If we all scatter and go in different directions, it becomes much more challenging for them to sell to us and create revenue. So even though social media has been a location whereby we're seeing a lot of divisive things posted and such, at the end of the day, they're trying to steer us down the path that they want us to go down. And it's a path that causes revenue for them. And one thing that Social Dilemma puts forth is, understand, if you're not buying a product and you're getting an app or software or something for free, then make no mistake, you are the product. And what are they selling of you, Corey? They're selling your buying patterns. They're selling what you do. But they're doing more than that. They're manipulating what you are thinking at that particular moment. Now, if they engage you really well, right, if widget posts really engage you, then every minute that you spend on every page, every comment that you make, every like that you do, increases your value to them. So all Corey's going to see is widget stuff.
Yeah.
It doesn't serve them any purpose to send him anything than widget stuff. So poor Corey grows up thinking widget dies thinking widget and never got the kind of thought-provoking growth and differing opinions that might have made his life very different. I'm sorry, I'm turning you into some imaginary figure now, Corey, but
no.
But it's a fascinating dilemma. And a lot of it is about fear. You know, some people are scared to change their minds. And when I wrote the book, Don't BS Yourself, Cut the Excuses That Are Holding You Back, I had to think about the title of my own book there for a second, that I focus so much on the fears and the things that are holding people back. And these things hold us back in so many ways. Business opportunities, discussions that are meaningful, growth, advancement, relocation opportunities, all sorts of things that cross our desks and our lives that we don't pursue or we look at incorrectly at the moment because of these inherent excuses that we have. And the big ones are fear. You know, another one is time. Sorry, John, I had no time today. Let me ask you a question, Corey.
What's up?
If having a purple shirt was the most important thing in the freaking world to you right now,
okay,
would you get up really early tomorrow morning to look for a purple shirt?
Oh, of course.
Would you stay up really late tonight trying to find that purple shirt?
Oh, yeah.
Would you try on every purple shirt in the world?
Absolutely.
Would you not say to yourself then, I didn't have the time?
No.
You made the freaking time, didn't
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
So when somebody says to you, I'm sorry, John, I didn't have the time, that's not what they're saying. What they're saying is, John, I didn't make the time.
Right.
Either you or it wasn't important enough for me to divert other things and do other stuff that I needed to do. And I always tell that purple shirt story because it's true, man. If I needed that shirt, I would get that freaking shirt by the end of today. If it was important to me, I'd get it done. So what's important to you? You know, in this podcast series, we talked last week about the fact that I really wanted to set some of us up and sort of change the way we think a little bit because this is the time of New Year's resolutions. By the way, Happy New Year, everybody. But this is the time of New Year's resolutions. And what are the things that will hold us back from achieving those resolutions? Well, we could say circumstance. That's one of the excuses in my book, right? Well, COVID, circumstance. I can't leave my freaking house. I can't this. I'm shut down. But those are pretty valid excuses these days, Corey. And I'm not one for accepting an excuse. But the circumstance of COVID is about as real can be. I accept that, certainly. But then there's other elements. Fear, knowledge, resources, other fears that people have that prevent them from going forward. I know you all have thought at some point in time in the last few weeks as this new year is coming and this terrible old 2020 is disappearing, what would you want to do to make your lives better this year? And what are the little things that you could do that would make big changes? And what are the excuses that maybe you could overcome? And you've heard me say this before, an excuse is nothing more than an reconciliation of a mistake. I did something I shouldn't have done, Corey. I got an excuse. I didn't do something I should have done. I got an excuse. You know, I screwed up. I got an excuse. Think about it. If I didn't screw up, I wouldn't need the excuse, would I? So that's the way this goes. So
yeah.
Anytime you give an excuse to yourself, what are you doing? You're making yourself accept your own failure. That's what an excuse does, Corey. You go to sleep that night. You think to yourself, oh, it wasn't my fault. It was that son of a bitch. He did it. Or that blah, 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 blah. It's that circumstance. It's that blah, blah. And you go to sleep feeling terrific. Because you diverted the failure. It's that son of a bitch's fault. It's not mine. Or it's that thing's fault. It's not mine. So I've always said, and I say this in my educational programs around the world, and these days the V-notes that we do, is that if you wake up in the morning and look in the mirror and say, I'm failing because of somebody else or something else, you have no reason to change anything, Corey. It just is what it is. But if you woke up that same morning and looked in that same mirror and said to yourself, shit, I'm failing because of me. I could do better. I could make a freaking difference. Then you would change. You wouldn't like that. Nobody likes looking in their own eyes in a mirror and saying, I'm a failure. I blew it. I'm not doing as well as I could. I'm not coming through for myself. I'm not coming through for my family. I'm not coming through for my boss. I'm not coming through for my own career. I'm not protecting my future. I'm not this. I'm not that. I'm not this. We could probably write lists like that. But the fact of the matter is, every one of those is satisfied by some frickin' excuse. So, this is an important segment, and I really want to set us up to have a good year. And to do so, sometimes I have to be conflicting. Sometimes I need to call you out. You guys see me do it on TV all the time. So I asked a bunch of our listeners, and again, we got thousands of responses, to write to me and tell me what their fears were going into this year. And is fear holding you back? And I want to address those today. And some of them are pretty damn heavy. And I bet a lot of them might apply to you and where you're at in your particular life. Because I know I have to deal with that stuff, Corey. For example, Bar Rescue is going back into production in 3 weeks.
Yes.
I'm very excited about it. It's season 8. We're going to do our 200th episode, which is a big freaking deal to me and the industry. You know, the show has now attained unbelievable revenues, unbelievable viewership. It's one of the most successful reality shows. But I got COVID. I got a crew of 60 people around me.
Yeah.
I got to go to 10 different locations in this area to do this shoot. You bet I'm a little scared. I'm not vaccinated yet, so you bet I'm a little scared. So I got to say to myself, do I mitigate this fear or do I mitigate the opportunity? Now, this is a little different because the fear is COVID and it's real and it's not subjective or ambiguous. It's pretty succinct.
Absolutely, yeah.
But the fact of the matter is the dilemma is still the fear dilemma. So, to me, can I manage the fear through processes and safety procedures and all those things, like you and I have the past few months, Corey?
Of course.
And still get the opportunity? Or do I turn my back on the opportunity? And I'm not sure that any of us want to turn our backs on opportunities these days.
No.
So Kyle S. in Cincinnati wrote me a note that said, I have a great opportunity for a new job within my same company. There's more travel, but it's working from home when not traveling, which is pretty cool. It's a role of new exposure and growth potential. It's more money, but not substantially more money. However, it would eliminate the security net of folks that have my back in my current role. I am very comfortable in current role as well. I could build that back up with effective relationships, but that for sure is holding me back from jumping in the deep end. I find it interesting, Kyle. And I ask you this question very directly, and I would say this to you if I was staring you in the face. Why the hell does anybody have to have your back? Why can't you have your own back? Why don't you have the confidence to say that I will succeed when I go forward? I don't need anybody to cover my back. I have the personality to build relationships. I have the skills to build credibility. And I can cover my own back. That's the heart of your fear, Kyle. So I ask you that question. In your life, who's the one person who has to have your back? You. And if you think you're going to count on other people to have your back in today's work environment, I suggest to you that the minute they can have your job, your back is gone. So I think that you need to weigh that very heavily, and I suggest that you learn to depend upon yourself. And I suggest that you proceed with the opportunity, because I suggest that you look in a mirror tomorrow morning and say to yourself, I have the personality to make friends, I have the knowledge to build credibility, and I'm a fool if I don't proceed opportunity. That's what I feel, Kyle. So there we go, buddy. That was pretty direct. Let's go to Ryan in Tacoma, one of my favorite places. I love Tacoma. It's some of the greatest meeting of water and mountains and stuff in the country is up in the Washington area. So COVID has shut down many businesses, but has also created opportunity for those of us that have never had the time to see our passions through to the end. I have been coaching youth and high school football for 10 years, and since COVID shut down our seasons, I have had time to start my side business. In 2021, I have two fears. One, I'm going to empty my savings account to purchase inventory and it won't sell. That's a significant fear. Two, I know nothing about patents, and although I have spent tons of hours researching them, 50% of people say they are useless for two reasons. Someone can make a slight modification to your design and sell theirs anyway, or B, even if someone does steal your idea, most of us don't have the money for the court battle anyways. Well, you know, you make a lot of good points, Ryan, so let me address them specifically. You know, it's interesting, Corey, because I haven't been in production since March, we have launched a lot of new products.
Yeah.
We've done a lot of amazing things that we would not have done if I was in production. And people say, yeah, you make a lot of money on TV. Yeah, it's TV. You know, I lose money sometimes on TV because you see the stuff we do when we're not on TV.
Right, yeah.
So you know, you got to weigh these things. So inventory, one, I don't know what kind of product you're selling. I'm guessing you're selling it online because you're doing it from home. Why can't you run 2 or 3 week delivery and announce it on the website? You know, years ago when people like Mike Lindell started MyPillow, delivery wasn't immediate. It wasn't shipping tomorrow. You ordered it and it shipped in 3 weeks. Why? Because that's how much time it took for them to get it from the factory. They didn't have an inventory.
Wow.
So maybe there's a way to mitigate your inventory. So I would take a look at that. I would take a look at if doing smaller purchases of items raises the price a little bit. Maybe initially your price is a little higher. And what's exciting about that is if you build a marketplace with a slightly higher price, the minute you know you're successful and you go into more inventory, you can say, okay, price just went down. Look at my pillow. They just did that on television. Right now, people pay $99 for that freaking pillow. Now you can buy it for $29. Who's the idiot now? Wow. So if he's selling it for $29, it probably cost him $8.
Yeah.
Right? And he was selling it for $99 when it cost him $8. Yeah. So he came out of the gate high, worked it low to keep adding value. So that's something else that you might want to consider, Ryan. And then, obviously, the amount of people who say that a patent is invaluable. Well, I have the first patent ever issued in music management 10 years ago, and the name of the patent was a method for achieving the desired ambiance, desired musical ambiance and hospitality properties. It was a patent. And patents exist because they are protectable. And even ideas that you come up with for a television show or script are inherently protectable. If you say that 50% of people say the patents isn't worth it and blah, 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 then don't get a patent, but still make the freaking product. That's not an excuse not to make the product. So I suggest that you're looking for reasons, Ryan, not to do the product. There's ways to manage your inventory issue that you put forth, and there's clearly an issue with patent. First of all, you can file patent pending on an item, and I believe you have months to file the actual patent paperwork. So you could file preliminary paperwork and find out from your attorney the preliminary steps that you have to do to put patent pending on your product. So you create patent pending, or you do no patent, but bring it to the marketplace. Know that it makes money and then spend the money on a patent. Honestly, Ryan, I think you're looking for reasons not to do it rather than reasons to. So I hope that helps you, buddy. All righty, next is Clinton V. So far, as any excuses go, I suffer from a delightful cocktail of low esteem with some depression, a shot of home-based distractions, and an ounce or two of general anxiety and attention deficit disorder, garnished with a touch of feeling of general worthlessness. How do I get my head out of that as mindset? Well, first of all, I would say, Clinton, stop being an ass. Candidly, nobody has those lacks of qualities. I have never met anyone in my life, and think about it, neither have you, met somebody who has low esteem and depression and home-based distractions and this and that and come on, man. You're seeking out every negative aspect to your life. I get depressed too. Do you ever get depressed, Corey?
Oh, of course, yeah.
How about during this COVID thing? Have you gotten depressed?
Yeah, I don't know who hasn't.
Of course. So are there moments when you're around people that are maybe have 20 years more experience than you in production and stuff? So are there moments where your esteem might be lower than the person who's next to you?
Of course.
We all have these moments, Clinton, but it can't be a freaking lifestyle, man. So if you have distractions from home-based, get rid of the freaking distractions. Sell your television, put it in a freaking garage, get rid of your video games, and say, I'm not doing that anymore. Act. If you have an ounce or two of general anxiety, maybe if you got rid of the household distractions, the anxiety would go away with it because you'd be accomplishing something. You see, all this connects in my belief. I believe if you get rid of the distractions and start to make a little bit of progress, Corey, progress removes anxiety, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
And when anxiety disappears, esteem starts to grow, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And then general worthiness starts to grow, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So what is the obstacle to Clinton doing that path? The freaking distractions at home.
Yeah.
Start by getting rid of those. Get them out. Turn them off. Do whatever you need to do. But focus on yourself and understand that if you have low esteem, it's an opinion. Somebody else might think very differently of you. That's up to you to change. Get rid of the distractions. Everything else is connected. Go accomplish something and watch how all the other items change. Kyle, in New York, my hometown of New York City. For me, it's the fear of the unknown. I'm currently 22 years old, just starting out my career in information technology, something I've been doing for the last 4 years. Time professionally, I worked the entire time. I was a full-time student in college and completed that hurdle. Since, especially with the pandemic, I've fallen out of love with the career I wanted to do since a young man in high school. I went to college for political science. I believe, and please verify me on Google or however you do your own verification, but if I'm not mistaken, over 60% of college graduates are involved in another career that is different than their major in college. Now, attorneys and doctors are eliminated from that calculation. But if you look at marketing professors and social workers and all the other careers, I believe over 60% of people that graduate college with a degree are now doing something else. I'm a perfect example of that. So John Lennon once said something. John, and I love this quote. John Lennon once said, "Life is what happens when you make other plans." And that's pretty damn profound. Don't you like that one, Corey?
Yeah, that's good.
Pretty profound statement. You know what's wonderful about life, Kyle? Is that you don't know what you're going to be doing 10 years from now. There's exciting things that are going to be out there that you're going to get involved in. And you're in information technology, man. You're in the computer sciences space. You're in the social media space. You can take this to meaningful places. Or you can say, screw it. I'm going to go sell widgets with Corey. but the fact of the matter is, your future is ahead of you, not behind you. And I believe the worst thing that you can do is say, well, because I'm in information technology, I've got to stay in information technology. No. You can use information technology in anything that you do. So open your mind. Look at all the opportunity and excitement that's going to cross your life in the next 2 to 3 years. And when you see the one that turns you on, go for it. And if information technology isn't doing it, then open up your eyes and you'll find what does. But I'll tell you, most of us, Corey, are doing something different by the time we're 30, 35 than we thought we were going to be doing when we were 21.
Yeah.
And that quote by Lennon really says it all. All righty, let's go to Mark G. And Mark's in California. One of my fears is the conversation I want to have with my manager, the owner, regarding my pay. We're both busting our butts working 5 to 7 days a week, 10 plus hours a day most days, and I'm on salary, so there isn't any overtime pay. How would you go about negotiating pay in times as uncertain as these to make sure you're getting paid fairly while also knowing that the restaurant is slower than last year? You know, Mark, that's a really great question.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people have this.
Yep. So I'm going to assume a couple of things. I'm going to assume that you like your boss, or you wouldn't be there working 10 hours a day, right, fighting for the business with him shoulder to shoulder like that. So I'm going to assume that your boss is a reasonably likable guy. I'm also going to assume by your question that you like working there, right, that it's important to you because you want to increase your pay. You're thinking long term. You're not thinking of leaving. You're thinking about how to make your job work, not how to change your job. So when I think about those things, here's what I would really appreciate if I was your boss. I'd appreciate you asking if we could sit down and talk for a minute, pulling out a couple of Cokes, sitting at the table and saying, you know, John, we've been working our butts off together trying to get over this pandemic. We've been working 10, 12 hours a day, 6, 7 days a week. I'm right there with you, buddy. And I want you to know how much, John, I support you in the business. And I hope my actions over these past few months have. You know, I'm focused on my income at the moment, but I also understand that the restaurant has no money to give me right now. So I'd like to create sort of an understanding with you. When the restaurant goes to past levels after COVID, which is only a few months away when the vaccine really gets distributed, once we achieve the revenue of last year, right, which means, you know, if March sales this year are the same as sales last year, that you would then give me a raise. So I would ask you to accept the fact that I was with you on the bottom end of this. Give me a little reward when we reach the top end of this. And I think any restaurant manager would say, you know what, that is reasonable. He deserves it. And I want him to be a part of my team because he gets it. And I think any restaurant operator, and I speak for my entire industry, we appreciate so many thousands, if not millions of employees, Corey, came to work with almost no pay, worked day and night to put in procedures and sanitize and clean and warriors. And they did it because they believed enough in their bosses or their restaurants, or in some cases, they don't love the restaurant, they don't love their boss, but they love each other. But they did it for a reason, because they cared. And when the industry comes back, we can't forget that. And I'm going to be a real advocate for that when this industry comes back. The employees need the reward for the loyalty that we've all been through. With the new PPP program coming into place, restaurants are going to get payroll money again. That's exciting. So people, you know, that maybe were laid off can come back again. But still, without customers, there's no tips, and the machine doesn't flow. So, Mark, that's a great conversation to have with your boss. It does two things. It communicates your commitment to the business and commitment to him. That's going to feel really good to him. You're talking about how to stay, not how to leave. You're thinking about long-term. When the revenues get back, give me a raise. It's all the right things that an employee should be saying, buddy. So I think if you follow that process, you'll do just fine. Well, that was actually good talk, and that really applies to a lot of people that are out there now, not only in the restaurant business.
Absolutely, yeah.
But you know, Corey, it's reasonable for you to say, no, I think I pay you pretty well. Do I pay you pretty well?
Yeah, of course.
So you know, I think that it's reasonable for somebody who isn't paid well because of the COVID to say, you know what?
Right.
After COVID, John, I want to know that there's a future for me after this together. Mm-hmm. I'm with you, buddy. I'm committing. I'm working day and night. I'll scrub floors with you. I'll get there.
Of course, yeah.
Just, you know, when it comes back, I want to be a part of that. Mm-hmm. And I think that any boss would say, you know what? This is a meaningful employee.
Yeah.
This is somebody who cares enough. Mm-hmm. All right, buddy. Let's do one more of these.
All righty.
All right. So we're going to go to Stephanie in New Jersey. Now, I must tell you, Corey, as a New York boy, I normally don't talk to people from New Jersey. I'm kidding. I'm completely kidding. I used to go to the Jersey Shore every summer, and I love New Jersey. But New Yorkers and New Jerseys have fun ways of communicating with each other, and I couldn't resist. All right, Stephanie writes, I've been in the hospitality industry my entire career, hotels, casinos, food, and beverage. I've been with my current company for nearly 6 years. Luckily, I've been promoted several times in that time. Now there isn't much upward movement opportunity, and I fear that I've pigeonholed myself, and it would be difficult for me to make a career move. You know, career moves are a thing of timing, Stephanie, too. You know, right now, if you were moving into the delivery business, I would say great opportunity. If you want a job for UPS, it's probably a good time to get one.
Yeah.
Or FedEx or Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon.
Or any delivery-based business like that. But, you know, it's all timing. Now, you've been in this place for years, 6 years. You've been promoted several times. Obviously, you're a winner. Obviously, you're a good employee. Obviously, you're capable. Obviously, you present the assets that enhance your business. Now, I've been saying this on this podcast for months. I believe this spring, this summer is going to be boom town in the restaurant industry. I believe when people get vaccinated, Corey, they're going to go out there having a good time. I know you will. People are going to go out there having a good time regardless of what age they are.
Absolutely.
We all can't wait to get to restaurants and stuff. So it's going to come back, Stephanie. So do you want to make a career change because of a temporary situation? Or do you want to make a career change because that's the best long-term goal for you? You need to think about that. If you're thinking this way because of where we are now, and that is temporary, certainly by spring and summer we'll be back, then how do you deal with the temporary so you don't lose what you've enjoyed for 6 years? And you don't miss that next promotion, which would be your fourth one. So those are decisions you need to weigh. So if you leave and do a complete new industry change, it could be exciting, it could be wonderful, it could be the best decision you make in your life. So one is unknown, the other is known. If you've been there 6 years and you've been promoted and you love the business and you say you've been in a hospitality business your whole life, my guess is you'll love it. And you're stuck with a temporary dilemma. Try to deal with the temporary nature of the dilemma. And in a few months, you'll be back at the industry that you love. And that would be my advice to you, Stephanie. But, you know, these are difficult times for all of us. And I look at New York, and I got to just take a stab at this. Freaking Governor Cuomo shuts down the entire state of New York. And then, devastating. Restaurants are closing. I can't tell you how many friends have told me, that's it. I'm not going to make it. I'm not reopening again. And then, a couple weeks later, he just comes out and says, you know, we can't have this. We have to open these businesses.
Great idea.
And it's just unbelievable that suddenly, 2 weeks later, we can't have this. We got to open it. But 2 weeks early, we can have this. And all of these employees and all of these restaurants are suffering, Stephanie, and so many of them are just like you. They love this industry. They're in it because they love it. Waitresses and bartenders don't become millionaires. You know, they make good livings, don't get me wrong, but they do it because it ignites something in them. They enjoy being around people. They enjoy making a product. They enjoy being in that environment. It means something to them. That's the wonderful thing about this industry. And we've all struggled, and we'll be coming back soon, Stephanie. And my guess is You'll be right up front and be one of them. Wow, those were great. I love doing this, Corey. It was really fun addressing these topics. And you know what? These were things that were meaningful to a lot of people. Honestly, they're meaningful to me. I know they're meaningful to you, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
So this was wonderful. So let's talk more about fear when we come back.
Don't shut down this podcast. John Taffer. We'll be right back.
Was Franklin Delano Roosevelt, maybe it was Harry Truman, I'm not great at my history from that era, who said, the only thing to fear is fear itself.
Yeah.
Now, man, does that mean a lot in battle, right, Corey? If you're scared, then you're probably more likely to get shot, right? Because you're going to fall behind, you're not going to be aggressive, Maybe blah, blah, blah. So what is fear? Fear is fear of the unknown. Or of an eventuality that you think would be harmful to you. And in life, our brains pursue pleasure and we run away from fear. That's what we do in the most basic primal sense as human beings, Corey. You run to what makes you feel good and you run from what makes you feel bad. That's life. But typically, the unknown that we're scared of has been done by millions of other people. In fact, it is not unknown.
Yeah.
I mean, millions and millions of people have started businesses. Millions and millions of people have taken the same risks that we're about to take, dealt with the same problems we have had the same fears that we have. So fear is not a new invention. And a car is not a new invention. So, I mean, you can get past fear if you understand how many people have dealt with it before you. And that what you're scared of, typically millions of people have already gotten past. So I suggest that fear is bullshit. And I wrote that in my book. Now, if you're standing on the end of a cliff, fear is pretty legitimate.
Yeah.
Right? If you're not going to wear a mask in a COVID environment, you're going to go out in a dense room filled with people, fear is pretty realistic with regard to COVID. So I'm talking about fear of the future, fear of the unknown. Because to me, Corey, if you're scared of your future, then you don't believe in yourself.
Wow.
That's pretty heavy, isn't it?
Yeah.
You see, I've always believed in myself, so I've always believed in my future. You believe in your future, I know, because I know you too well.
Of course.
Because you know you can do a good job. You know you can keep a job. You know you can make friends. You know that you can make a future for yourself. Imagine if you didn't know that.
Yeah.
You'd be freaking terrified. So fear and confidence and purpose sort of slap each other in the face. Purpose eliminates fear because I got a mission. I'm going, boy. I'm moving forward. And confidence eliminates fear every time. So don't look at the fear. Look at the decision. We had some great calls. We talked a lot about fear. But the underlining factor to every one of these is the fear wasn't in fact real. It was either temporary or created the basis for opportunity to go forward. So I say it again. The only thing to fear is fear itself. We know how to protect ourselves from COVID. We know how to protect ourselves from outlandish risk. We know how to stay safe. We know how to put seatbelts on. We know how to put masks on. We know how to deal with the fears of everyday life. All the other fears with regard to business and growth have all been done before. Look at yourself. Don't look at the fear. Ah, that was a little heavy. Maybe a little deep. I don't want to get too heavy on this. But you know what? This is an important topic. And I really want people to put this aside this year. We need each other. And fear is the biggest thing that's going to get in the way of us and digging our economy and our lives out of this mess. Well, next week we've got Damon John.
Yes.
And we're going to focus on knowledge, and we're also going to focus on scarcity, because Damon is unbelievable at starting businesses with nothing and finding knowledge. Last time he was on our podcast, I guess it was about a year ago, Corey, and he had invested in 87 businesses through Shark Tank.
That's crazy.
So I'm really eager to hear how those businesses are going, what's working, what isn't, what new ones he's done, how he's dealing with, and how he finds knowledge. Because he invests in business every day he knows nothing about. So talk about fear.
Yeah, that's scary.
So Damon has a lot to say about these topics. I look forward to talking to you all next week with Damon. And the only thing you have to fear is, in fact, fear itself. Talk to you next week.
Subscribe to the John Taffer Podcast right now for more episodes every Thursday.